Welcome to the Marsham Toy Hour, where we discuss anything and everything designer toys. This is episode 13, and I'm Gary Ham.
And I'm Tyler Ham.
And Aaron is not with us tonight because he's exhibiting at Awesome Con in Washington, D.C. But no worries, we have a guest joining us. Anyone who has spent any amount of time in the designer toy scene should be very familiar with our next guest. He's customized more toys than I could probably count, and has contributed many designs to brands like Toy2R, Kid Robot, Pobber, Android, Art Toys, and I'm sure the list goes on and on. He's the giant, jolly old black and white cookie of the designer toy scene. He's John Paul Kaiser.
Morning. Good evening for you.
Yeah, welcome to the podcast, John.
Thanks very much for having me on. Yeah, I'm really excited to be on. Aaron gave me a heads up a few weeks back. Well, quite a few weeks back now, actually. Because I wasn't aware you were going at first, so I missed the first three or four episodes, but then binge-listened and caught up. Yeah, absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think people are just starting to tune in now, even though we're, what, 13 deep?
Yeah, I've noticed our traffic's kind of going up, too. It kind of hit, I assume all podcasts do this, but they kind of go and you kind of hit your average downloads per episode. And then for some reason, kind of since the Bob Africa one, we're hitting, you know, about 20% more people. So it's good growth. I'm going to take this as a moment to say, if anyone out there really likes this podcast, we really appreciate you sharing it and writing reviews on iTunes whenever you can. The more reviews we get, the more iTunes gives us visibility. So anything you can do to help us out in that way is very, very, very much appreciated.
Yeah, certainly. And well, John, you've been interviewed up the wazoo, so yeah. I don't know that we can ask you anything that you haven't already answered and all your other interviews. So I think rather than just doing a straight up interview, let's just hit on some of your points and then we'll just go ahead and just talk toys for the next hour.
Yeah, sure. That's good to me.
So would you mind taking a little moment and telling the listeners a little about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm John Paul Kaiser. I'm a artist, designer from the UK. My thing is black and white, mainly high contrast, really sharp, bold, slightly menacing kind of customs and toys.
Yeah, and you were doing customs like pretty heavy, but you went from customs to designing mass produced toys like pretty quickly within the first couple of years of doing customs, correct?
Yeah, I started doing customs. I think I was introduced to designer toys around 2006, beginning of 2007. And yeah, within a year, I was doing my own customs. And by about 2009, Toy2R Raymond and Kevin Winnick, who's Toy2R USA, had picked upon me. And I designed a figure I wanted to get made. And I sent them through the designs for a quote. And Kevin replied to me saying, "We've got none of your toys on file. Would you like to design a key?" I'm like, "Yeah, that sounds great." He sent me the templates. And in a couple of days, I got a couple of different designs back to them, and it went from there. Yeah, they were supportive, and we hit the ground running. So within 6 months to a year, we'd done maybe half a dozen toys.
Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah, I remember you doing a lot of stuff for Toy2R. It seemed like.
Yeah, it was great working with Kevin. He's kind of disappeared now from the toy scene, but it was, at the time, it was great.
That's so cool that you just jumped in with a key. Like, what a cool way to kind of, like, you know, announce yourself to the toy world.
Yeah, because it's not like it's a tiny platform at the time. It was, you know, hugely important. It was, you know, it was, for me personally, I think, it was the kind of platform below Dunny's. Not below, that sounds bad. But it was kind of up there, ranking nearly as high as Dunny's, perhaps, is the way to put it. It was.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The kind of cornerstones of the scene.
Yeah, no, it definitely seems very much like it. And the fact that you said you made probably six toys in total with them in like a year's time, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, well, I was a designer during the day at work, and if I had a little bit of downtime, I'd do some of the work then or on my lunch. Shouldn't have said that, should I? I did it all on my lunch.
You just admitted that your old company owns the rights to everything you've produced.
No, I did it all on my lunch.
You'll be getting a letter tomorrow asking for royalties.
All that toy money. Yeah, we're
10 years worth of royalties.
£15. Yeah. Yes, I did it on my work at the lunch. Used the work computer, and I was just really enthusiastic and happy to begin the opportunity, and kind of went at it. Yeah, egotistical, but I really wanted to make a point, I guess.
Who's playing the piano over there?
Oh, sorry, I've got Facebook open. I was going to close that in the background. I've wished somebody happy birthday, and they've liked it.
Oh, that's good.
So funny. I just turned off my Facebook, and then I had my birthday afterwards, and I didn't realize like how much happy birthday stuff comes from Facebook. I got like no calls, texts, no anything. when they don't have that little reminder, it just falls to the wayside.
With my cousins, I've got billions of cousins. And I have no idea when most of their birthdays are, so I rely on Facebook completely.
Yeah, oh, totally. I'm the same way. Even immediate family members, I can't seem to remember any date, so Facebook comes really handy for that.
Like Greg.
Exactly. When's his birthday? Oh, wait, he's my brother. He's my twin brother. It's my birthday. Yeah. Oh, speaking of social media, we have a segment we call Leaks and Sneak Peeks. You want to get into that with us a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
You have something on mind?
So I've got a couple of things, actually.
Okay, well, good. Let's tell the listeners our segment, Leaks and Sneak Peeks, is the segment where we talk about something that we have seen on social media this week or through a toy blog or whatever. It's something that we thought was really cool and we're looking forward to and want to help promote. So, John, if you have a few, why don't you go first?
Well, the first one is from a Korean collective called Toyns. It's, I think there's three artists in the group. I'm not entirely sure because it's kind of hard to find information on them.
Yeah.
I was introduced to their work by Andy Hung from the Toy Chronicle a few months back. And it's mainly ceramic kind of figures and toys. And they're really minimal and they're really beautiful. And one of them is Yongpa Toyns, YONGPA_TOINZ on Instagram. And they've a work in progress of a Tyranno figure. It's just a small kind of cute dinosaur looking thing. And it looks amazing.
Cool. I'm going to have to look that up because I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it either.
So that looks really good, really exciting. And also Luke Chu's Bat Bear, by him and Mighty Jack.
I like that. He looks so sad.
Anything by Luke Chu, I like. I've met him quite a few times, hung around with him, because he's friends with Jesse Giroux, who I'm good friends with too. Mm-hmm. He's such a character. He's quite a funny guy. And so getting to know him gives a different dimension to his work as well, which I quite enjoy.
Right. I feel like I see something from Luke Chu every week. It seems like he's got a release every month, it seems like. Or something in the works, whether it's a custom show or a release or an old painting is now being created as a bust or a toy. He's always has something in the works.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's a good thing, I think.
No, that's definitely a good thing. He's doing well, for sure. Yeah, those are all great choices. How about you, Aaron? Or Tyler? How about you, Tyler? Man, it's late here.
Yeah, not to break the fourth wall, but it's like past midnight for Gary and I, and it's the wee hours of the morning for John. So we're all a little out of sorts. Yeah, but I actually have mine again. I'd like to do a follow-up to one of my old leaks and sneak peeks. And so, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, it was my birthday a couple weeks ago, and somehow – I mean, I never thought my wife paid attention to this, like, toy collecting thing that I do. You know, I always thought, she's cool with it as long as it stays in my office. But aside from that, I kind of figured, she doesn't care when I show her, hey, check this out. Check out this cool thing coming out. But somehow really paid attention, and she found out how much I wanted the Unbox Industries Vampires, the John Ken Mortensen vampire set.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah. They are amazing. And so I came home on my birthday, and she, there's this big box waiting for me, and she's like, surprise, you know, I remembered, I got them. I mean, these things, like, I tried to get them, and they were sold out, so I have no idea when she, you know, and I was pretty adamant about getting them. And they are actually, like, they're actually better than imagined. I mean, Unbox just crushes it, and these are unbelievable. They're great, great figures. I mean, anyone who's on the fence, I mean, I know they're sold out now, but I assume they're going to be doing other colorways. I mean, if you're on the fence about it, I would just say go for it. You won't be disappointed. They are amazing.
And I saw it when you posted on Instagram. Like, the figures are way bigger than I thought they were.
They're huge. The biggest one's like 16 inches.
Yeah, that's huge.
I mean, they're big. And they're all – they're kind of the color of the bodies, which I didn't realize, is kind of like a translucent vinyl that kind of fades from black to clear with a – like a dry brush silver highlight. It just looks great. You know, it makes me want to go back and buy the Witches series, if that is ever available again. Yeah, well, Unbox has, you know, Unbox has probably become my favorite producer.
They just,
from the past three or four things they've shown have just all been A pluses.
Yeah, and did you see their Instagram feed this week where they went over to he went over to China, and it was just tons of factory photos showing you the process, all the different stages. It's kind of like a little education.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And again, also, if anyone's ever been kind of curious, like, hey, how are these vinyl toys made? Go check out some of the Unbox stuff.
Yep.
Check out their Instagram. And I think they had some videos too. I mean, it's really cool just to actually know how the toys are made. Cause it's a lot. I think people will be surprised to realize how handcrafted vinyl toys are.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like a line in some nameless factory somewhere. You know, each vinyl toy is basically handmade.
Yeah, and from his photos, it kind of killed that factory look that a lot of people have assumed. He also gave really long descriptions of each stage, like what slushing is and what is, you know, the rotocasting and all the definitions and, you know, really nice description. So, you know, Dan did a really good job capturing the process of toy making through his photos.
No, he did great. And that's my kind of my part one follow up. So, and my second part, though, actually isn't a toy at all. But I mean, everyone who is listening to this is probably at least casually familiar with the Suck Lord.
Who?
So. Yeah, he's a New York guy. He's he makes illegal figures. It's okay. IP infringing. No, but like, you know, the Suck Lord, he's a friend of the show. He has his own podcast called The Suck Hour that I love.
I totally enjoy it too. I love Suck Lord. He cracks me up.
I mean, he's just a character, and he's funny. I like that his show is about more than just toys too. Like, his show's about it's kind of about everything. You know, it's not necessarily something I could recommend that you put on at work. Like, you know, like, if you just catch my meaning, like, it's a little like not safe for work stuff sometimes. But I mean, he's just interesting. Like, he has his mom on who's hilarious. it's a great show. And so, and unlike some of us that have full-time jobs and do the designer toy thing kind of as a subsidizing our full-time jobs, you know, Suck Lord does this as a full-time career. And he has recently set up a Patreon account that I want to kind of give a push to, because I feel like artists should be supported. And he does this full-time. He's done a lot of stuff for free. He does his movies for free. He does the Suck Hour for free. And he's just a guy really trying to make it. He started the whole bootleg resin movement, which is huge. So he started this Patreon account. It's patreon.com/thesucklord. And I just wanted to mention that. I'm happy that it's out there. And like I said, he's been a great friend of the show. He and I have worked together in the past. We're friends. So, you know, if you want to support someone for a couple bucks a month, I would suggest looking that way. And if you actually want to see a really funny podcast too, I can say that the Suck Hour is a good way to spend an hour a week.
Yeah, I actually listen to it at work. I don't actually watch a lot of it at work because it is a YouTube show as well. You know, with nice editing and stuff. But I enjoy listening to that one. And probably the thing that I like about Suck Lord the most is not only his quick wit, but how just freaking honest he is. You know, like, he'll tell you he's had a shit time or not making money, or if he needs business advice, he'll admit it. He's just telling it like it is, and he's willing to accept advice. Like recently he had, you know, Benny of Tenacious Toys on and got great advice from Benny, and he was totally accepting of it and wanted to hear it. And so that's really cool. That's probably the thing I really like him about him the most, is you're not going to get BS from him. Although, you
yeah,
know,
and I, well, I mean, like, not any more BS than you expect.
Right, exactly. That's what I mean. You know, there is a shtick and a lot of BS to it, but there's a lot of honesty behind what he says too.
He's sincere in his assholishness.
Yes.
I don't know.
have you ever met him, John?
Yeah, I've met him a few times. Yeah. He's insulted me a couple of times as well, which took kind of personally. But yeah, he's hilarious. Yeah. He, I think it's 2012. He hosted the DTAs in New York.
Yep.
And he's just such a showman, isn't he?
He is. Yep.
Very much a showman.
Dude, it's impressive what he does. Like,
yeah.
I thought podcasting is pretty difficult for him to sit there at a designer toy con and interview people for an 8-hour day straight. And be on top of his game, at his wits, and that's impressive. Like it's
he's got some balls.
Yeah, he does for sure. We'll have to have him on sometime. I'd love to talk to him.
I would too.
All right, well, good ones. And mine is last week we were talking with Horrible Adorables, and we were actually talking about how it would be pretty cool if there was a designer toy convention in Middle America. So, since we just, you know, we're talking about that last week, this week there was actually an announcement that there is going to be a designer toy summit. And they are pleased to welcome all toy artists, companies, customizers, sculptors, bloggers, podcasters, along with any toy manufacturers, suppliers, equipment providers to take part in this Designer Toy Summit. It's got several tiers available for, you know, booth setups and table setups, and it's sponsored by the gang over at Discordia. It's Gavriel and Star over at Discordia Merchandising. And that sounds like maybe a new potential convention that's kind of in the middle of America. Like I said, John, you know, from LA to Memphis, it's your kilometers over there, so it's 2,800 kilometers from.
I still, we have miles too.
Oh, you got miles too. Okay, so so it's. I looked it up. It's 18. It's almost 1,800 miles to from LA to Memphis, and wow, just almost 1,100 miles from New York to York to Memphis. Yeah, so
that's more than twice the entire length of Britain.
So there you go. So that's why I don't know if there's a need, but it will definitely be nice to have something where maybe both East Coast and West Coast could travel to. But
I feel like this will be kind of an interesting experiment. You know, like if this works really well, I can see others kind of taking that model, you know, because I wouldn't pick Memphis if I was going to for a place to do a show. You know, it wouldn't be in my, you know, my first thoughts. And I think a lot of people feel that way. But if, you know, a show like this can do really well in a place like Memphis, you know, maybe places like, like somewhere near you, Gary, like Arizona would be like, hey, like maybe we could do a show here or you know, Colorado or, you know, where Kid Robot headquarters is.
Right.
You know, if it's just going to be interesting. You know, I can't, obviously there's no crystal balls here, but it'll be, what's that called when you have an experiment and then you have like the never mind. it's too late for science
talk. Put that one together. When I first heard about being in Memphis, I thought, wow, why Memphis? Like, who's there to pioneer the convention there? Because usually when something starts up, like a Vinyl Toy Network that's now, you know, DCON or whatever, like it starts small from a lot of like the local artists that, you know, pioneered the event for 5 years before it became, you know, what it's become today. So when I heard Memphis, I'm trying to think like, what's there? Is there, you know, like even with a 500 mile radius that someone could drive to it, you know, I'm trying to think of any artists or companies or stores that are near there. I can't think any off the top of my head, but maybe there is a lot more that we know about that are willing to go out there. And it's in Memphis is a central hub, like they said, for trains and planes. And, you know, it should be easy for anyone in surrounding states to get to.
Yeah, I mean, there won't be a shortage of hotel rooms or anything.
No.
I had to look it up on a map. I wasn't sure where Memphis was. So strategically did it on my phone.
Yeah, so I mean, it's Memphis, Tennessee. And, you know, when we were talking with Horrible Adorables, we were talking about what a great location, you know, something like Chicago would be, because you already have Rota Fuji there, and so many designers already live in Chicago or just on the outskirts and Ohio and whatnot. So that seems like
Design scene there, isn't as well?
There is. Yeah, so that's kind of where I was expecting the first one to pop up, and then it popped up in Memphis. So that was a little interesting. But another thing that kind of threw me for a loop, and I know this is confusing. I've talked to several people about this, and the use of the word summit, designer toy summit, I know a lot of people don't understand. Is this a convention, or is it just a gathering of leads in the designer toy industry and talk? Like, people are confused. Is it a convention, or is it... like, what is it? And I think that's just all because of the term that they're using, summit, instead of convention. But from what I've understood from looking at the website and whatnot, I believe it is a convention. They're just using the terminology summit for it.
Yeah, it makes it sound like it's a peace talks or something like that.
Exactly. It's it's very confusing. It's
thought it meant it was like the top of a mountain.
Yeah, when I think about the word summit, I always think of like government heads all coming together to talk policy and whatnot. Yeah. So maybe they're trying to redefine what we know as summit. And but I do think they're trying to gather everybody in one place and do that. There was – I want to kind of get your input on this, John and Tyler. When I was looking through the details of the convention – I saw a little note, and I'm going to read exactly what it says. It says, "All Funko Pop reaction figures and related goods are banned from this event, with the exception of custom toys that use these items as a base are allowed. This event is for independent artists and creatives only. Corporate licenses, mass-produced items are restricted from Designer Toy Summit." How do you guys feel about that?
I mean, I don't know if John, if you want to go first, or if I can go first.
You go through it first.
Yeah, because I've actually had a little more time to think about this, because I read that too, and I personally think that is a that might be a little bit of a bite your in the ass type situation where okay, so if you don't want Funko to come, you know, all right, whatever, but like, you don't want licensed goods, so now what, Kid Robot can't come? Exactly. Loyal Subjects can't come.
That's what I thought too.
And what about a Labbit? The Labbit is a staple of the designer toy community. Kid Robot licenses the Labbit from Kozik. So where's, you know, it's going to be, I don't think you should put hardline rules like that when you're obviously going to have to be making exceptions. Because then it's like, well, you can be licensed if you're licensing from an artist, but not a company, but you can't. I don't know. I feel like it's a it's kind of a battle that doesn't need to be fought. Right. You know, it's like, you know, maybe pick your battles, but the banning of reaction figures doesn't seem like a very good battle to pick.
Yeah, it's a hard stance for sure, John. Yeah,
and what does it hurt? It doesn't hurt anybody either. You know, what does it hurt if you know? I would think a new convention would want people like, you know, Tenacious Toys to come there and support it. But, you know, why would Tenacious Toys come to something like that if they can't sell toys? You know, Tenacious Toys sells a ton of Funko, and so does Toy Tokyo. And, you know, Funko saved a lot of these shops. So I don't know. I feel like that is going to be something that should be looked at and revised.
For sure. Yeah, I agree with you. It almost sounds like they're trying to call out Funko, because that was the company that was mentioned, and I don't think Funko's hurting the designer toy scene by any means. Like, no one's not buying someone else's a designer toy item because there's a Funko item there. They're not buying that designer toy item because maybe it just doesn't appeal to them. It's not hurting anyone's business, so I don't understand why to cut it out.
the only crossover they have is the material they're made of.
Yeah. But even like you said, like, so basically, according to the statement, Kid Robot could go there, but they can't have their Ninja Turtle line or Family Guy and stuff like that.
South Park.
It sounds like any of that would not be permitted at this show. And it also said this event is for independent artists and creatives only. So does that mean they don't want big companies? Like, I have to imagine they want Kid Robot to be there. Maybe it's just an oddly worded sentence and we're looking too far into it, but I don't like the cutting out of the We're Licensed Good, because they're going to be charging for this event, like $20-$30 for entry for a 1-day event. And people who aren't into designer toys might, they're going to go and they're going to hope to maybe see some licensed stuff. Maybe, I'm sure a few guys are probably going to show up thinking that they're going to see vintage toys or something like that. But if they can go in and see some licensed toys, that's not going to hurt anything. That's just going to benefit things. It sounds like this convention is trying to be so designer toy that it's not allowing itself to grow and welcome newcomers to experience designer toys.
Yeah, I mean, I get the intention. I mean, it's like it's a noble intention, but I mean, look at DesignerCon. DesignerCon has Super 7 sets up there. A lot of companies do, and Super 7 sells their licensed stuff, and that doesn't hurt. Super 7 selling licensed merchandise doesn't hurt the artists that are selling unlicensed merchandise. So I get it. I get that they want to build something that's just for designers, but you don't want to, by keeping big companies away, you're also keeping sponsors away. So you don't want to bite the hand that might end up feeding you.
Yeah, it feels a little bit reactionary, like it's they're trying to make a point, like you're saying. But with Funko, it brings people in. It welcomes people in. It's a gateway drug, isn't it? This has been spoken about before. They're a gateway toy. They introduce people who wouldn't be into toys normally into the designer toy world and scene. It feels like a bit of a self-defeating kind of thing to exclude them.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see. Maybe they'll change it over time, but I thought that was real interesting when I saw that noted, because that's a pretty hard stance for sure.
Saying you'll be banned,
Yeah, you'll be banned and restricted. It's I don't know of any other conventions that's ever tried this hard of a stance, and they're trying so hard to be only the designer toy niche, and like vendors that maybe aren't known in the designer toy industry, but they do something that's kind of crafty. Are they going to say that's too crafty to be designer toy? Like, it's dangerous, I think. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. I went to New York Comic Con, not last year, but the year before, 2014. And the Funko queues there, Toy Tokyo, for instance, the queues were gigantic for Funko. So they were dominating at the time. So I can see why some people might feel threatened by that.
Yeah, I mean, Funko is a huge property. But look how many people it brings in, though. Brings new eyes to stuff. And I don't see how it hurts anything. But anyways, it's cool that Discordia is bringing a designer toy specific convention to the central U.S. I think it's still early yet, and they're still very much figuring out all the details. But what is set is that it will be held in Memphis, Tennessee, March 18th, 2017. It's a great date because it's pretty much set right in between DesignerCon and San Diego Comic-Con. So for anyone interested in exhibiting or attending, head on over to designertoysummit.com for further information. Well, John, speaking of that, that's a pretty good segue into another topic. So you've come to the States several times for several conventions.
Yeah.
From your perspective, what are, if any, are there any differences between the toy scene you experienced here in the States versus what you experience over in the UK?
Yeah, it's quite different here in the UK because, for a start, it's loads smaller. It's a smaller scene. We're a much smaller place. So people who are into toys here generally, because there are only a few hundred, I know most of them most of the faces, and know almost all of the other artists here. So it's quite intimate, it's quite small. Because there aren't many producers here, it tends to be very craft-based, very independent, a lot of customization, a lot of resin casting. So it's quite good. It's quite quick. It's quite dynamic. So things can shift quickly. Guys like Rich Page, Yumi Toys, that is, Evan Morgan, they're doing casting. True Tech from Many Toys, all brilliant at casting and sculpting as well. So we can turn around things quite quickly here. So it tends to be smaller batches, but it's quite creative. It's really nice to see. In the US, it's a much larger thing. There's better organization. There's more variety as well. So there's printmaking companies like Mondo who are making toys. There's companies like Kid Robot. There's actual producers in the US now. And a lot more artists because there's a much huger population. So it's exciting to go to the US. It still feels like going to Hollywood when I go into like DCOM.
Right. So is it hard to get toys in the UK then?
There's not many physical toy stores anymore. There's a couple, but there's Forbidden Planet, which is a chain, and they have a small section of designer toys. There's a couple of small galleries and toy shops around, but very few. So most things are ordered online.
And you guys pay those astronomical international fees, which are, you buy one dunny and you're paying $20 to ship a 3-inch figure, you know. That's,
and if you're unlucky as well, we get a high import tax. So it's 20% import tax plus a handling fee, So which is between £8 and £12, which isn't a lot, but that's like $15 to $20, roughly.
Right.
Add on to the value of your toy after you've paid for the shipping anyway.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think the designer toy production hasn't come over there? Because, I mean, the UK has a long history with toys. And, I mean, just giant companies like Palitoy and Corgi and all these toy powerhouses that were there. I mean, why hasn't a Kid Robot or, a Funko-type company popped up over there, do you think?
Well, I think it's a slightly different mindset. Sometimes, but there are Unbox Industries, which is quite large here. But a place like Palitoy, they closed down a long time ago, so the facilities aren't available. So to set up here would have to be from scratch, which is an expensive kind of thing to do. And I think we're quite tight-fisted here compared to the US. Our mindset's a little bit different, so we're a lot more, a lot more wary about kind of investing money, I think, and putting money where our mouth is. So I think that's the biggest difference, where Americans, I found, tend to support each other like financially as well as with advice and emotional support. And there's not as much here. It's a different kind of support.
Hmm.
So we're much more looking to part with money, I think, in the UK.
Right. Okay. And so do you plan on attending any conventions in the States this year, like San Diego or DesignerCon?
Yeah, I'll be at DesignerCon this year. I've got a booth. One of the last ones, which is one miracle, I've heard.
It's just worth its weight in gold right now.
Yeah, I'm going to make a board here of people who got in and people who haven't. And John, you're the first one who gets a mark as having a booth.
You're the first person who I've heard even say, yeah, I got one.
Yeah, no, he is.
My computer's just gone off. I only got one because Jesse, J.Ru, sent me a message saying, George Gaspar has put something on Facebook about there's only 5 booths left or something. So I wasn't even sure if I was going to come across this year, but when I thought if I don't make this decision, I can't. I bought a booth straight away and lucky to get one of the very last ones.
Well, that's good that you're coming out for that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
You're actually going to be having a booth too. Usually you're just in attendance walking around. So now people will be able to track you down. Although it's not hard to find you. You're a pretty tall guy. So
Yeah, which is quite good. I had a booth last year, which was my first year of having a full booth to myself there. And it was a bit of an eye-opener. So it was quite good because I made a lot of mistakes last year. But I learned from that and I know what I want to do this year. And I kind of trialed it a little bit at ToyCon in the UK in April. So I've got quite a clear idea of what I want to do. So this year should be more successful.
Are you going to bring your UK posse with you, or is it just going to be you coming out?
I think it's just me. Last year there were loads. There was myself, there was Gary and Andy from the Toy Chronicle. Lee from Collect and Display, which is a online store here, which is really good. Rich Page and his wife and daughter came across. Neil from Manny Toys. Doc Hay, Bruce comes every year. I'm sure there were more as well. And most of us got the same flight as well. So we were all at Heathrow at the same time. We all flew on the same Virgin Airways flight. It was cool.
That sounds awesome, actually.
Oh, that is cool.
Like, we're all good friends as well. So that's nice.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, you know, the designer toy scene, like, has its, I hate the word click, but, you know, certain artists are drawn to other artists and a lot of friendships have been built. And I was going to ask, like, you know, who do you run with? Who do you talk toys with?
I talk to Jesse, J. Roo, sometimes several times a week, sometimes a couple of weeks ago past, but I talk to him very regularly. And awesome. Andy Hung from the Toy Chronicle, he's one of my best friends now. He lives like half an hour's drive from me. So we meet up once a fortnight, have lunch and spend the afternoon just talking about toys. So yeah, see him an awful lot. Yeah.
Cool. And
Rich occasionally, because he doesn't live too far away. Matt, he lives I live in the outskirts of Leicester. Matt lives in Leicester, so I don't see him as much. But yeah, yeah.
No, that's cool. Matt, he's one of my favorite customizers. I have to get him on the show sometime.
He's really funny. He's quite quiet. He's quite dry sense of humor, but he's hilarious as well. Yeah. Good advice.
Wait, so you're saying that someone from the UK has a dry sense of humor?
Yeah. Strange that. Yeah, but he's particularly dry.
I actually have a question that I've been wanting to ask you since I first saw your work.
Okay.
And I probably could have emailed you or tweeted you, but now seems to be like the best time to ask. So ever since I've seen your work, and I mean, when I started getting into the designer toy scene, you were already, I feel like, kind of like I've said about Gary, it was just, you guys were just always there. Like, there wasn't a time in the scene where you two weren't showing work. But ever since I first saw your work, I've always felt like it's very reminiscent of like a Scrimshaw type work. I mean, is that just me, or is that actually something that you've thought about, or is it?
It's not, but I've going back to mention Jesse again. He's said that as well about my work. I've never
hold
really
on. I'm looking up Scrimshaw.
Okay.
Well, also with like the UK's rich history with whaling, and you know, a lot of Scrimshaw comes out of, or at least came out of that region.
Yeah, there's a museum. It's a couple hours drive from me, in a place called Hull, which isn't the most pleasant looking of cities, but that's got one of the largest collections of Scrimshaw in the world, I think. There.
Let
me step in here.
The top five collections.
Let me step in here real quick. For everyone, Scrimshaw is the name given to scroll work, engravings, and carvings done in bone or ivory. There you go.
Yeah, to elaborate on that, it was mostly from when the whaling ships would go out to get whale oil, they would carve the teeth of the whales just to pass the time.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that now that I know what it is. Now I'm looking at Google images and stuff. That's a good comparison.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a conscious thing, but it's a nice comparison to make. And it's a really interesting kind of, I don't know how you describe it, sort of craft or creative outlet or whatever it is. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's good history.
I've noticed, too, like you've actually done some of the dunnies that have the whale and the ship, or like the kraken in the ship, which are very, very Scrimshaw reminiscent. And those are actually some of my favorite work. My dad was a big Scrimshaw collector, and I have a couple of his teeth in my office here.
Wow.
And so I've always thought at some point here, I'd love to commission you to do a whaling scene, because I would love to see that money or a dunny in your style.
Oh, thank you. Sorry.
You got a message. Tell Jesse you'll call him later.
Yeah, I messaged him yesterday. He's not got back to me yet. Scrimshaw whaling. Yes, thank you very much. It's something that I'm quite interested in. I love Moby Dick. I read the sinking of the USS Essex, the whaling ship Essex.
Oh, in the heart of the sea?
That's right. Yeah, I saw that on the flight on vacation last week. So I watched that then. So it's something I am really interested in. I love sperm whales. The whole kind of like the romanticized kind of image of whaling. You know, it's a horrible thing, I guess. But the it's awful, actually, isn't it? Yeah, thinking about it. But,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're not doing whales any favors.
No. It's when you're reading, particularly in the Essex book, how many whales they were killing, and it's pretty stomach turning, actually. But I'm going off the point completely. Sorry. I love the old engravings of them, kind of thing, and the for the plate prints, that kind of stuff. So it's something that's really interesting to me. I'm a bit of a history geek as well, so it makes it even more appealing.
So no, me too. If anyone who's listening wants to read a really cool true life adventure book, pick up In the Heart of the Sea. It's a very, very good story about human perseverance. I just thought I'd throw that in there for the Marsham Book Club that we're starting.
I like that. Marsham Book Club. Yeah, well, maybe that'll get me to actually read a book. I'm an audiobook kind of guy. So John, you're actually the first customizer I think we've had on the show. And one thing that we hear a lot we'll receive emails about is we have a lot of like newcomers to the toy scene, a lot of people looking for knowledge and how to get into the scene and customize. So can you go through the steps that you go through to prepare a platform before you begin painting it?
Yeah, well, the first thing I do if it's a painted toy is I strip it down so it's blank. And then generally,
what do you use? Do you use acetone for that?
Yeah, so I got a big, huge tub of acetone. I clean it down, listen to music while I'm doing that.
Okay.
And then once that's done, if I've got no idea for it yet, I sit there for ages and just stare at it, kind of looking at the shapes, turning it at different angles, looking for the shadows, the sculpt casts, trying to come up with ideas and see what would fit in there. Once I come up with that idea, if it needs a little bit of sculpting, I'll add sculpting to it and prime it. I use car primer spray paint because it works out the best.
Yep, that's what I used to.
Yeah, then I sketch directly onto it with a cheap Bic ballpoint pen. Again, it's just because I found it works best. I've tried all kinds of different things to draw with, and a 17p pen works the best. It doesn't smudge, it doesn't bleed, it doesn't react with the paint or the ink. And then I paint it in with acrylics and just take my time, listen to podcasts.
Your main base is usually white then. So do you do the whole base in white acrylic first?
Yeah, and then I paint the black into it. So I kind of paint it in backwards almost. And it's quite a labor-intensive way of doing it, which isn't something I kind of realized when I first started doing it this way.
Finding out that you do all this fine line work with a brush just makes all these pieces so much cooler.
Right.
And they just make them so much more impressive that those are all brush strokes.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. It just, pens don't work the same. They can't get sharp. The curves aren't as nice.
Mm-hmm.
And the courage just doesn't look as good. So, yeah, just paint and brush works so much better for me.
That's impressive. And you've done, how many customs do you think you've done? Like 600, 700?
Oh, no, more than that. It's closer to 2,000, I think.
Holy Christ.
Oh, my God.
I had no idea. I mean, I knew it was a lot, but I didn't know it was upwards in that amount. Yeah. That's insane. How do you come up with...
You're like the Wilt Chamberlain of customizing.
Yeah, and it seems like you're always doing original stuff. Like, how do you... You know what I mean? Like, how do you not repeat yourself and
what? Well, I kind of decided a while ago to try and never repeat myself. You know, that was kind of an early rule. So even if I was doing the same figure, like I've done the Batman, the Joker from Dark Knight Returns a couple of times on the same platform for people, but I'll always make it different. So the suits will be different tonally, the creases will be different, the face paint will be slightly different every time. So I never replicate something exactly. But I think when you're designing, drawing and sketching, I have a sketchbook with me all the time. And I think by just exploring ideas and just sketching and doodling, you come up with more ideas. So when you're busy with work, you're never short of ideas. It's only when you take a break to try and come up with ideas, that's when you struggle, I think.
Yep. Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
That's so many, 2,000 customs. That's,
yeah. I can't even wrap my head around that.
No, that's a lot. That's, I mean, in a short period of time, you said you started in like 2007, and it's...
Yeah, so it's less than 10 years.
Yeah.
I've been doing it full time for 3 years now. So before... No, it can't be 2000, surely. It's not far off, though. It's, yeah, I'd done about 800 by the time I left work 3 years ago. And doing it full time means I can do, well, and working 5.5 days a week, 6 days sometimes.
Oh my God, you've completely blown my mind. I'm trying to wrap my head around that number. That's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I start in the morning. I've got like a commissions list, so I've always got kind of like at least a dozen sort of lined up, ready to go, and then the shows as well. I also did a stupid thing a few years ago in 2012. I did a show at Yo-Yo Mart in New York, where I thought it'd be a brilliant idea to customize one of every single character that appears in Star Wars: A New Hope.
Okay.
A mini money, or a mini. Thinking, yeah, it's probably like Kenner. Well, because I looked at the Kenner figures from the 70s and 80s, and like, I think there was 60 figures for all three films. I was like, wow. I mean, they did the most obscure character. I bet there's only like 30 or 40 maximum. But there's 94 individual characters in the film. And I, yeah, painted them all like an idiot. it seemed like a really good idea at the time. And then once I was kind of halfway through preparation for it, I started in January, the show was in November. So by July, I was kind of losing my mind. I was doing work during the day, commissions and my lunch, and then Star Wars show customs at night. So I just never stopped, and it kind of burnt me out a little bit.
Hey, you have a wife. When do you see her?
Every morning, every evening. yes, no, but when I'm working, I work 8 till 5 every day. And then I work Wednesday nights as well, and sometimes Saturday morning and a couple of hours Sunday night. But I strictly finish at 5 o'clock. I get downstairs, come out of the studio, I make dinner for us both. Kelly comes home from work.
You're a good cook, I hear.
I'm not the best, but I like my cook.
Well, you're not going to be on, you know, UK's Next Great Chef show, but you can, you know, your way around the kitchen, is what I'm saying.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. I've cooked for years. I'm the main cook in the house, and I like eating a lot.
Eating's yeah, good.
I'm fairly good at cooking at something, like do good burgers, good at curries. Uh-huh. So yeah, so at night time it's tools down and it gets left, so I just have time to unwind, watch TV, go out for a drink, or chat to my wife. Yeah,
that's good. I mean, that's important that you're on a schedule. Like, we talked to Chris and Reiniak and Amanda Louise Spade too, and they're a couple that you think works 24/7, but they were also saying, just like you, like, they have a schedule, they know when to put things down so they can still enjoy life. It's not all work.
Great. There's kind of an attitude that I see on social media, particularly with some artists, where if you're not working every single hour and killing yourself, you're not doing it right. And that's so wrong. When I left work, I went through a really intense, kind of stressful period. And my wife's a mental health social worker, so she knows about kind of how stress and depression could affect you, and you know, physically and mentally. So she has always kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, reiterated how important it is to take a break, to take a rest, to not do work 24/7. It's so bad for you.
Yeah, some people are just wired that way. I never have been.
I never have been either. Mm-mm. But I've also noticed, though, like you were saying, I feel like a lot of the artists that do this full time, a lot of the more successful people do that. You know, they treat it like a 9-to-5. Yeah. You know, they get up in the morning, you know, they go to, you know, they, even if going to work means you're going into your office or going to your desk or workshop or whatever, but you go, you know, you go at 8 and you come back home at 5, you turn it off.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so important, and it's easily overlooked what effect it can have if you don't do that. It takes over your life.
Yeah, no, it certainly can. Like, I'm sure a lot of relationships have been hindered by, you know, being in a relationship with a creative, because, you know, when the creativity hits, you feel like you got to get the work done. Like, I know sometimes if I have something I really want to do, I can be in a bad mood because I'm not getting it out, you know, like, you know, being a family and with kids, like sometimes I just can't get in the office when I want to do it. And so sometimes, you know, I can be in a, not a bad mood, but maybe I can be a little, irritable maybe, you know? And so my wife knows, like, once she lets me get out there and, you know, hit the wood shop or get whatever's on my mind off my chest, I'm in such a better mood. And then I can binge watch something or just enjoy doing something else. But yeah, being in a relationship with a creative, I think there needs to be like a support group for some of the wives and girlfriends and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've talked about it kind of in joking, but about having like a the wives of Marsham on to talk about us behind our backs.
Oh, God. The stories my wife could tell.
Yeah. I don't even think my wife could sit in my office that long.
My wife would tell you that she's the brains behind everything that I do, because I do. I bounce a lot of stuff off of her.
Oh, same here. Yeah, absolutely. So
she'd be like, because you know how it is, John. Like, you work on something for 6 hours straight and you just don't have fresh eyes anymore. So I'll run to my wife and be like, what do you think of this? Or she hates it when I bring the Pantone chips over to her and I'll say, do you like 159 or 157? She doesn't see the difference. I see a big difference, but she doesn't see a difference.
And I don't have that issue.
It drives her nuts.
You have to be careful with that, because if you drop the whole PMS thing at the wrong point, that could start a fight that you don't want to get into.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Well, speaking of actually your this kind of strict work regiment that you've put yourself in, what is sort of the turnaround for one of your pieces? I mean, I realize that based on size and complexity, there's going to be some variance.
There's massive variance, and I've still not kind of narrowed it down, because sometimes I can take a figure like a tequila, and in a morning I've got it painted and completed, and then I can take the same figure and do something slightly different, and it's 2.5 days worth of work, and the end is all wildly different. So I'm not quite sure. I've not narrowed it down, to be honest. It varies so much. It can be 2 hours sometimes for a small dunny to 6 or 7 hours for a small dunny, wow. 3-inch one. So it depends on how quickly I come up with the idea, how complex it is, and if I cock up, if I mess it up, and I got to revise it or change it. Yeah, it's hugely variable. And I thought at some point I'd be able to kind of narrow it down, like, this takes 3 hours and that's it, or this is going to take 4 hours, or this size will always take, or this platform will take so long, but it's never consistent.
That's actually nice to hear in a way, because I feel like we all kind of go through a lot of that, where, especially when you're bidding a job or something, you know, and you think, oh, I've done this twice and it took half a day, so I'll bid half a day. And then you're 3 days into it and you're just like, God, I'm getting paid, you know, dollars, you know, $3 an hour at this rate.
Yeah.
I feel like that's just something that happens to
That sounds like, from my point of view, because I wasn't sure if other people had the same kind of thing as me, if I was just an idiot.
No, I think I know I'm that way. I can sculpt the same thing 4 different times and it'll take, you know, 4 different amounts of hours.
So, John, what do you have coming out mass production wise? I saw that you have the collaboration with Huck G on with the Pobber.
Yeah. The samurai figure. Yes. Yeah. I can't say too much about it. There's going to be an announcement coming soon and another announcement at Singapore Toys Games and Comic Con this year, as that's in September. But yeah, it's in the wax stage at the moment.
So it was over a year ago since it was first leaked, right? And now we're just in the wax stage. Was there anything particular that has held it up, or has it just been just the nature of manufacturing?
Yeah, it's just the nature of manufacturing. We were trying to do, there's several colorways. So there's a couple of mine, we've got Hooks, and there's another artist maybe coming as well, but I think it's just ironing it out. Other production stuff with Pobber getting in the way, not getting in the way, but, you know, that's how companies work, kind of. They've got other projects to finish first.
Right.
So it's full steam ahead. Mine has a different facial sculpt to Hook's, so the faceplate will comes, I think, not. Well,
oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it won't be interchangeable. It's two separate face sculpts for the same figure, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I explained myself really badly there.
No, but I mean, it's a great looking figure, and I know a lot of people. I've read comments and whatnot. Seems like a lot of people are really looking forward to, you know, this one releasing. So,
yeah, I'm really excited about it. I know I'm biased because it's my figure, or it's Hook's take on my figure. But yeah, it's really exciting. It's a figure to have an original sculpt. I've not had an original sculpt made since Captain Sternbrow with Toy 2R in about 2010, 2011. So this is the first one for a long time, and it's just, I love the aesthetic, the scale and the stance. They nailed the sculpt. Yeah, it's gonna look good, and the pay application, if they get it right, will look sick.
Oh no, they will. They'll get it right. I worked with Popper on a few things, so
of course, yeah.
Jake is He's really good about making sure everything is exactly how you envision.
Yeah.
So they'll get it right for sure. Is there anything? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I was just saying I have a few Popper toys in my collection and a couple of things Jake sent me. Yeah, the production is flawless on all of those.
Yeah, he's doing really good stuff for sure. So do you have anything else in the works, or is it all secretive stuff?
I do have other stuff in the works. It's secretive. There has been a bit of a leak, but I don't want to confirm it or anything. But there's going to be an announcement by a certain company at Comic-Con, I believe. So
you're saying I didn't do my Sherlocking good enough?
No, you didn't. You should have asked Aaron. He knows.
Oh, Aaron. Well,
I can't say it because it's not been officially announced, and it's not my place to announce it. But it's for 2017 release, and it's really exciting.
Okay,
it's going to be good. Yeah,
I'm taking it. Might be Martian Toys related.
This is something else. But also, yeah, Martian Toys as well. Yes, sorry. And there's more. Yeah, I can't say anything about that either. Yeah, there's something with. Well,
talking to toy people, it's so hard because everything's so.
And again, that's hush. I figure that's designed by somebody else. I've done a colorway of it, so it's not my place to kind of say anything about it because it's somebody else's figure. But it's a cool figure, and I'm excited to be part of that as well.
So one thing I love about since we've been doing this podcast, and Tyler, you can probably agree, is once we go off air, all the stuff we learn.
Yeah, there's definitely once the recording stops.
Uh huh.
Yeah, it's like Marsham after dark.
Yeah. It is. So, and we have some really great segments that are unfortunately never been recorded, but like, you catch people when it's recording, we are getting people in the real state, but like something happens when we all think that we're not recording anymore. It's, I don't know. There's been some great segments that I wish we had recorded. You know, just for maybe a little extra episode, maybe an addendum or something like that. So in the future, Tyler,
if we ever need to get revenge on an artist.
But even just like some amazing stories have been shared, not anything like bad talking or any like secretive leaks, just like other good stories that we just continued the dialogue past recording and that was captured. And maybe we just need to let it roll, and maybe we can cut some of that stuff back into episode, because there's been some really good stuff that.
Oh, there's been some great stuff
that
some
we absolutely haven't gotten great on stuff. The air. Oh, John, it sounds like you got so much stuff in the works.
Yeah,
it's exciting for you.
It is. Yeah, I'm excited for the future. I think 2017 is going to be a big year. There's quite a lot happening, so that's good.
And you're self-producing, so you did the Woodsman and whatnot, so you got some self-production runs going on yourself too.
Yeah, there's a thing that I've got called the Workers Project. So it's my own sculpt. I get them cast by Evan Morgan here in the UK in resin. He's really good at casting. And then I paint them up. There's a pre-order system, and it's roughly every other month. So one month I release a print of the character, followed the month after by the figure. But it's something I feel really passionate about. So there's so much pop culture. I wanted a bit of kind of something a little bit different that wasn't just ripping off Star Wars or Transformers or Thundercats or whatever, like that nostalgia market. So I was kind of looking at what was important to me and sort of like working class history and skills that have largely been lost in careers. So something that was once part of like a central part of a community, like a blacksmith, for instance, or a lumberjack, or the latest one, a coal miner. You know, they weren't so integral to, you know, the development of a community or the way a community works or being able to create farm tools or, you know, shoeing horses, that kind of stuff, or providing food.
Yeah, yeah.
Like careers were so skilled, now have just been replaced or lost because they're unnecessary or sidelined. So it's just an exploration of that, really.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's something I'm really interested and really passionate about. So
I like that. It's kind of the polar opposite of pop art or pop culture.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, culture, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And are you casting these yourselves as well?
Evan Morgan cast them for me. Okay. So I sculpt them and paint them, but Evan cast them because I'm hopeless at casting. I've tried it before, and it takes me so long to fill in all the holes and the bubbles.
Right.
I may as well just sculpt each one from scratch rather than cast.
Yeah, I've never tried casting. I would like to try. I'm so terrified of chemicals. I have a problem just even priming stuff and spraying the yard with insecticide that I don't know if I can get myself into resin casting and that whole cancerous thing. But
Yeah.
I get a migraine about 10 minutes into resin casting, so I don't do it either. I just had to stop. It wasn't worth the pain, like the actual physical pain, not just like the mental and emotional pain.
But I do want to try it. I mean, at least you guys sound like you guys have at least tried it. I never built a Lego frame and poured silicone in, and I've never done any of that. So at some point, I would like to try that just to experience it, and so I know all that really goes into it.
I know it's fun to do. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, especially if you can do it outside. I mean, where you live too, it's temperate enough where you have a lot of nice outdoor days.
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, it was 114 today, 116 tomorrow.
Well, I guess that's too nice.
Beautiful weather. What are you talking about?
Jeez.
No, it's basically, this is the time of the season where we just go to water parks. We have a water park behind the house. We'll go there every single day or, you know, after work. So the next 3-4 months, we'll spend pretty much every day either at the water park or hibernating inside with the AC. So that's how Arizona works. Oh, you know what? We had last week we announced a giveaway contest for a set of Horrible Adorables vinyl toys. All the entrants had to do was follow at Marsham Toy Hour on Instagram and leave a comment of just a monster name. And we had 14 entries in the contest, so the chances of winning this is really good. Let's just go ahead and pick a lucky winner. So to do this, we gave each person a number according to when they commented. And what we're going to do is we're going to use mathgoodies.com to randomly generate a number between 1 and 14 for us. So I'll just go ahead and pull up that website now. 1 to 14. And let's just go ahead and select our winner. The lucky winner is number 10. I actually have that person written down. Let me check. Number 10 is Maggie, it's Maggie, and her name was Foxalope. So Maggie, congratulations. You won yourself a set of Horrible Adorables toys. We'll get you in touch with Aaron and get your address and everything, and we'll get your figures sent out to you. And John, you know, thanks again for coming on. It was great talking with you. Always looking forward to any new releases and announcements, and hopefully I'll get to DesignerCon this year, and we'll get to talk and hang out there. And what we like to do is just let you take a moment to let everyone know where they can find you and seek out your work. So why don't you take the platform?
Okay, I'm all over the internet at johnpaulkaiser.com. That's J-O-N-P-A-U-L-K-A-I-S-E-R.com. And all over social media. All of them are /JohnPaulKaiser, or one word. So Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, MySpace.
MySpace?
I don't know if it's still going, but yeah.
Friendster.
Yeah, Napster.
Flickr.
Friends Reunited. Yeah. Cool. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, definitely. Love having you on. What about you, Tyler?
I'm at HamFX on Instagram and at TylerHam.com. And I actually just started kind of re-twittering. But it's just going to be kind of nonsense. But if anyone's interested, it's at Ham_FX on Twitter.
All right. And I'm Gary Ham. You can find me at SuperHam.com or Gary Ham on Instagram. And this has been the Marsham Toy Hour. If you want to get in contact with us, please email us at marshamshow@gmail.com. We'd love to hear any feedback or comments or anything you would like to hear us talk about on the show. We'd like to thank John Paul Kaiser again for joining us. This has been the Marsham Toy Hour. We invade the airwaves weekly, so until our next transmission, we are starting off. Bye. Thank you.